Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. We rely on the generosity of our listeners to sustain this ministry and the message of the coming kingdom of heaven. Please consider making a donation to Beth Emmanuel by clicking on the Donate tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
And this is Shabbat Vayeshev, in which Joseph has those two dreams that so irritate his brothers that they try to get rid of him. 20 years later, they meet again, and the dreams have come true. 20 years ago, on the first day of Hanukkah, Shabbat Vayeshev, Kislev 25, 5763, the year of our Master, 2002. We conducted our first Shabbat morning prayer service in the facility we were renting, Maplewood Covenant Church in Maplewood, Minnesota. When I stood up to address the community that morning, I pointed out that it seemed like an auspicious occasion for our first service as an independent congregation because Hanukkah is considered a day for inaugurations. Most of you were not yet part of the community on Shabbat Hanukkah, 5763. Kislev came early that year. It was November 30, 2002. It was really the first time the community had seen the facility we were renting, a beautiful old-fashioned little white country church sitting on a few grassy acres off White Bear Avenue in Maplewood. Marvin and Mariana Root had discovered the location in a frantic search for a location to meet. We walked into the sanctuary of that church on a Saturday morning with 80 people or so, counting the children, I believe, and we filled the pews. It was obvious that there would be little room for growth in that location. As it was the first day of Hanukkah, I said to the community that morning, "I've checked the oil. We have only one day's supply. I don't know if we should light the menorah or not. I'm not sure what the right thing to do is in these circumstances. But I say we just go for it, light it up, fire it up, and see what happens. Who knows? Maybe a great miracle will happen here, too." That's what I said. I really didn't know what was going to happen. 20 years later, I think we can say a great miracle happened and continues to happen in that somehow the light that shines from Beth Emmanuel is still going, Baruch Hashem, thank God. Eric Bjorker was there 20 years ago. Aaron Eby was there 20 years ago, his first time serving as cantor. Rachel Cohen was there with her family. Monica Ewell was there. The Lancaster family was there. The Mobergs were there. The Mickle family was there. A lot of the rest of you, or your parents, joined us within the first few years. But most of the people that were there for the very first service are no longer with us. Several of them we have buried, like our sister Dorothy Dusterman, our Bubby Tybee Wexler, our elders, Marvin and Mariana Root. A lot of them moved out of town over the years or did not follow us to Hudson, like Bill Harvey. Many left for personal reasons. But most of those pioneering brothers and sisters realized, some sooner than others, that Beth Emmanuel was not going in the direction that they had anticipated. No fault of their own. They were misled by me. When we started the community, we called it a Sabbath fellowship and boldly declared that we were not Messianic Jewish, nor were we a synagogue. In hindsight, those type of declarations may have been premature. We've discussed this before in the series of teachings titled, "It's Too Jewish." From where did the original 80 pioneers come? Since most of you were not there, I'll tell you the true, previously untold story. I wanted to start a Messianic congregation. In the late 1990s, I was teaching with a ministry called Bridges for Peace and also teaching well-attended weekly Parsha classes and adult education classes at Church of the Open Door in Robbinsdale and at North Heights Lutheran Church in Roseville and Arden Hills. My wife and I were also attending Church of the Open Door at the time and enjoying that faith community. The problem was that we were trying to live a Messianic Jewish lifestyle as non-Jews, and we had no community support for that. We were not one law. That systematic theology of homogenization had not yet been articulated. We were more or less, for lack of a better term, B'nai Noach. Our friends were all Lubavitchers, where Back in the early 80s, my wife had been a nanny in the community and made a lot of relationships. I had a job in St. Paul's only kosher meat market, which served the Lubavitch community. I attended classes in that community and fell in love with Hasidus. We had begun to speak with the rabbis in the Lubavitch community about conversion, and we were on the path to convert, covertly, concealing our faith in Yeshua. Then I read Galatians and Paul's prohibition on Gentile conversions. But the larger issue was that I felt ashamed about concealing our faith. I couldn't see how this was going to work long term. One evening, Rabbi F. comes into the butcher shop and asks me, "So, what's happening with your conversion?" I told him, "I decided that the 7 laws of Noah are enough to worry about without taking on more opportunities to sin." He said, "That's fine. It's not a mitzvah to convert. There's nothing wrong with being a Ben Noach, as long as you don't worship the one the Goyim worship." And he fixed me with a knowing eye. I wish I could tell you that at that moment I stood up for the name of our master, owned my faith, and defended him. I didn't. Instead, to my shame, I denied him. I said, "I know, it's a Avodah Zarah." He could tell that he had put me in an awkward spot. I think he knew I was not being completely honest, so he jested, "Same rule goes for Muhammad." I said, "Well, at least Jesus was Jewish, so he's got that going for him." Rabbi F. conceded, "That's true." And that was the end of our conversation. And that's when I knew our family had to leave the Lubavitch community. I could no longer continue to keep my faith on the down low without denying the master. That's when we started attending Open Door, and I began to dream about an Orthodox Messianic Jewish community. We had briefly attended the Messianic Jewish congregation Kehilat Sar Shalom in St. Paul 5 years earlier, but we had left on bad terms and with a pretty bad attitude, which was completely my fault. So there we were, a Messianic homeschool family before there were Messianic homeschool families. We felt double isolated, and we felt like we were wrecking the kids. My wife prayed long and hard for a community for our kids. I thought the best way to do that might be to start a congregation. I wanted to start a Messianic Jewish community modeled after what I knew from Chabad Lubavitch. It was burning in my heart. I wanted brothers and sisters in Messiah to love and revere our master and his teachings the way the Lubavitch community loved and revered Rabbi Schneerson and his teachings. I wanted brothers and sisters in the Messiah to daven with. I wanted brothers and sisters in Messiah to study the weekly Parsha with, to celebrate Shabbat with, to celebrate the holidays. I felt obsessed by this idea. I wanted to see my children raised in a community like the one we had left, but one in which Yeshua faith would not be anathematized. I shared my heart with my teacher and mentor, Dwight Pryor of blessed memory. He said, in his serious fatherly manner, "Don't start a congregation. The body of Messiah needs another congregation like it needs another hole in the head. If you want to start a community, do what the early church did and start meeting in your home." I regarded Dwight Pryor to be the equivalent of my Rebbe, second only to Yeshua. I took this as a word from Hashem and considered it to be a personal prohibition on starting a congregation. We considered the home congregation, but our house would not work for that, and it didn't seem like a great idea. We invited some other homeschool families to our home on Saturday mornings, and we hosted other old friends from Sar Shalom, but there was no way that was going to work. I felt like David must have felt when the prophet Nathan told him he was not to be the one to build it. I felt like God had put this desire in me and given me the passion and ability to teach Torah, but for some reason I was not supposed to start a congregation. How does that make any sense? I felt completely frustrated. I spent 3 or 4 years working apartment maintenance to make a living, reading Josephus and Abraham Joshua Heschel during the lunch breaks, dreaming about this imaginary religion of Orthodox Messianic Judaism. Sometime later, late 1999 or so, an Assemblies of God pastor friend I knew through Bridges for Peace named Jay Christensen started talking about how he would like to start a messianic church. I was thinking, wow, that sounds like what I want to do. Close enough, anyway. Hashem said that I should not start a congregation, but he didn't bother telling Jay. So I agreed to help Jay out. In fact, I got 100% behind him in the effort and really pushed it forward. We started a short-lived venture in Roseville called Sabbath Christian Fellowship. Sort of a workaround to the prohibition my Rebbe had given me, and probably a mistake on my part on the level of Hagar and Ishmael. A lot of people who had been attending my Bible studies joined right away, including Frank Wanzel and other early Beth Emanuelites like Jagainers and Kunos. That's where I met the Brazil family. We named it Sabbath Christian Fellowship, and we started meeting in Roseville, first at a community center and then at a church called Messiah Eastgate. I wrote a condensed liturgy based squarely on the Art Scroll Siddur for Sabbath Christian Fellowship to use, and I volunteered to teach the children's classes. As it turned out, our children were the only children in the community, and so I was teaching them on Shabbats, just like at home. So that didn't really help much. A few months later, Messianic Jewish Rabbi Stan Farr called me and said, "I know you are working with Jay Christensen, but I'm leaving Sar Shalom to start a community in Duluth, and I need a rabbi to take over here." He wanted to continue to run the business side of Kehilat Sar Shalom, but he said that it would be my community to do with whatever I liked, so long as it remained a Messianic Jewish community. He agreed to let me take the title pastor rather than rabbi, and he gave me permission to change up the services however I liked. My wife did not think it was a good idea, for a lot of reasons. She was absolutely right. It was not a good idea. I wasn't deterred. I was all in and started teaching at Sar Shalom on Shabbat Vayetzeh in the fall of 2000. By the beginning of 2001, I was full-time on staff at Sar Shalom. Like I said, my wife didn't think this was a good idea. She was right. It was not a good idea to return to a place we had left. It was not a good idea for me to become a pastor because I'm really not a pastor nor a social person. And it was not a good idea for me to take over a Messianic Jewish synagogue because I didn't really like Messianic Jewish worship music, Messianic Jewish dance, or, to be honest, Messianic Judaism as I knew it. Besides, I only knew of one Jewish person there, and that made all of my efforts to Judaize the place oxymoronic, like, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? But I had this burning vision, so I immediately set to work trying to push this poor, hapless people toward a more Jewish expression of Messianic Judaism. As my wife predicted, it didn't go well. That whole dream I had about starting an Orthodox Messianic Jewish community modeled after Chabad Lubavitch quickly collapsed. Plus, it was right there in Highland Park, which made me feel really nervous. I didn't want my Lubavitch friends to know that I was the leader of the place that they derisively referred to as the fake shul, so I kept a low profile in both communities. It was really not great. 2 years later, Stan Farr decided he wanted to return to Sar Shalom. He knew I had quit my job to come work for him, and he's got a big heart and has always had a soft spot for my family. He didn't want to just fire me, so he said, "The sanctuary is at 80% capacity. Let's divide the community. You go into the north suburbs, and whoever wants to go with you can go with you. We'll be one community in two locations." That sounded all right to me, a chance for a fresh start. But I didn't want to be on the payroll any longer. It didn't seem likely that the little community was going to be able to afford a full-time salary. So I applied to First Fruits of Zion for work. They hired me to start immediately. Beverly Weichel suggested the name Beth Emanuel, so did Marvin and Mariana Root. The plan was for Beth Emanuel to conduct a Motzei Shabbat service on Saturday evenings for a few months, and then after we found a facility, we would transition out. That lasted for two Shabbats. I don't really know why the plan changed, but I think it was because a lot of the congregation started attending the evening service, certainly more than we had anticipated. Something changed. The whole relationship collapsed. Everything fell apart. In hindsight, the right thing to do at that point would have been to just step down and say, "Look, I don't want to split this community." but I was still young and full of vinegar. So we scrambled to find a facility. That's how we ended up in that little white church in Maplewood. We had no money and, thanks to the breakdown with Sar Shalom, no legal status. So I asked Pastor Christensen if we could simply take over the Articles of Incorporation he had filed for Sabbath Christian Fellowship. That's how we became Beth Emmanuel Sabbath Fellowship. I thought that was the direction to go because my attempt to create a more traditional type of synagogue experience and environment at Sar Shalom had really not been well received. So I was thinking, yeah, Sabbath Fellowship. Just a bunch of Gentiles doing some Jewish stuff. That same week, Marvin and Mariana found the facility at Maplewood Covenant. We signed a rental agreement, and at 10 a.m. on Saturday, November 30, 2002, 80 of us arrived in that narrow little sanctuary. From where did the original 80 pioneers come? They came from Sar Shalom. They came from what remained of Sabbath Christian Fellowship. And a few came from Church of the Open Door. A few from North Heights Lutheran Church. The rest of the story, most of you know, how we went down the wrong path under the influence of one law theology, how we struggled through issues of Christology, the heartbreak over how many people came here to join us only to leave us by abandoning our master, and how we vacillated between two competing visions for the community, the Orthodox Jewish direction and the Gentile Sabbath Fellowship direction, a tension which remained unresolved for a long, long time. Obviously, the Orthodox Jewish direction that I originally dreamed about prevailed, primarily due to the influence of Tzvi Aharon, Yisrael Nachum, and Shalom ben Elisheva and Yosh Kadosh. But it took nearly 20 years to see that dream fulfilled. A lot of the people that started the journey with us from Sar Shalom, or from my Bible studies at North Heights and Open Door, or from Sabbath Christian Fellowship, we're not so enthusiastic about a more Jewish direction, which makes a lot of sense since they were not Jewish. I don't fault them at all. But a lot of you did get it, stuck with it, and took hold of it, and made it work, through thick and thin. And over 20 years, we became something more than just a Messianic synagogue. We have become a family, literally. First off, two of our founding members got married. Aaron Eby married Rachel Cohen, and brought us Neshama, Levi, Miriam, Yaakov, and Ruth. Aaron also introduced us to his sister Tessa, her husband Troy Mitchell, and their daughters Grace and Eden. Since then, they brought us Reuben, Ari, Eli, and Ronan. Another set of early Beth Emmanuel marriages involved the friends of two Hmong kids that used to hang around, Yang Vang and Mike Yang. They also brought their band teacher, Cedric Stripling. Mike went out to California to find a bride, and he returned with a Sabbath-keeping Adventist Hmong girl named Carrie. They are the parents of Malachi and Shira. They also brought their friend Susan to Beth Emmanuel, and she became the wife of founding member Eric Bjorker, the parents of Talitha, Jonah, and Ivana. At some point, Jacob Hankey married Faith Thompson, and they had David, James, Mira, and Grace. Jacob's sister married Mike Vitullo, and they had Mike and Zeke and Zach, Aviela and Aveline. Jacob's sister Lizzie married John Thompson's good friend Jordan Shuck, whose sister Alyssa married Bob and Carrie Miko's son John. John and Alyssa are the parents of Amicia. Bob and Carrie's daughter, Emily Mickle, married Aaron Seibert, a boy from the homeschool co-op the Mickos and the Lancasters attended together. Emily and Aaron are the parents of Edmund. Bob and Carrie's daughter, Laura, married Damon Jacoby, and they are the parents of Ziva and Shimon. Let's not forget about Nick Hankey, who married Jillian, or John Thompson, who married Andy, the daughter of Whitney and Ari Price from the Kansas City communities, longtime Beth Emmanuel friends, who we know from many Shavuot conferences and other visits. John and Andy just had a baby girl named Ember. John's sister, Sarah, married Nathan Burns, the son of a Beth Emmanuel family, and they brought us Mira. Going back to the Vitullo family, remember that Mike married Becca. Mike Vitullo's sister, Megan, married my son, Simeon, bringing my grandchildren, Solomon, Eliana, and most recently, Louis. Megan's brother Matt married Delaney Golightly, a girl we first met when she attended a Shavuot event with her parents, who are long-distance members. She was one of our first students in the 1221 program we created here at Beth Emanuel, which has become the FFOZ program by the same name. Matt and Delaney brought into the world Jenny and the new arrival Rin. Mike, Matt, and Megan's sister Maddie Vitullo married Isaac Timmon, a visitor that I think came along with Golightly's on that first visit to Beth Emanuel, and they have become the parents of Vivian and most recently Peregrine. Isaac Timmon's friend and brother Delaney was a boy named Tuckerman Golightly. He married Hadassah, the daughter of Beth Emanuel long-distance members Eli and Bobby Coelho. Hadassah then became the mother of Keziah. At the wedding of Tuckerman and Hadassah, Hadassah's brother Ezra met Tuckerman's sister Bailey, and they were married a year later. Also, at the wedding of Tuckerman and Hadassah, my son Gabriel began dating Hadassah's bridesmaid, a girl named Bethany Ritter, the daughter of a Florida family, Sunshine and Jeremy Ritter, that visited regularly during Shavuot events. They were also married about a year later, and are the parents of my granddaughter, Aurelia of Orlando. These are all sons and daughters of Beth Emanuel. Some of them are not formal members, but as the saying goes, you can choose your friends, but you can't choose your family. Beth Emanuel means house of Emanuel. The Hebrew word house can also refer to a household, that is, a family. Of course, there's a lot of you who are not married into this tangled web of family relationships, not yet. But I wanted to show you what this looks like and what it will, God willing, continue to develop into. Not all of these families are local any longer, if they ever were. Not all of them are formal members, but all of them are practicing some form of Messianic Judaism. And that looks to me like intergenerational continuity. Some of them are Jewish families, most are not, but all of them, to a greater or lesser extent, identify with a messianic type of faith expression. It's not just a synagogue, and it's not just a local community. It's more like a people that began, I would say, with an awkward conversation in a kosher butcher shop where I realized that I could no longer hide out in the Lubavitch community. Let's not fail to mention the 199 long-distance members who support the community, study along with us, and consider Beth Emanuel their spiritual home, or the hundreds of Torah clubs and thousands of Torah club members who receive teaching and spiritual nourishment that's going out from Beth Emanuel. I guess it's fair to say that a great miracle has happened, and that single cruise of oil has kept us going these 20 years. With God's help, we have defied all probability. Between 70 to 80% of church plants fail in the first 5 years. How much more so in our little world, outside of the church, and outside of mainstream Judaism? We have absolutely swum upstream every inch of the way. 20 years is a big deal. Experts in the business world say that it takes most new startups 20 years to develop the strength, internal culture, resources, and social infrastructure to scale up and succeed, but that if a company makes it 20 years, it can blossom. Maybe that's also true for a congregation. I believe that's possible. That's how it worked out for Joseph. After 20 years, he saw his dreams actually come true. He was reconciled to his brothers, and he was able to say, "God meant it for good, for a great salvation." May God bless you, Beth Emanuel, and all of your children, and your grandchildren too. And may the light of our Master Yeshua shine through you.
Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.